and welcome to MILF Talk, Make Your Life Fabulous, where we like to talk about anything from parenting and money issues to sex and dating. I'm a psychologist, life coach, author, and mother of two. But more importantly, I just want to say that today I am currently flanked by hotness.
Wow.
Yes,
oh, my goodness.
Ladies and gentlemen.
The flattery.
Not only do I have She's the flanked. Sexiest ginger this side of the UK, Todd Anderson in the peanut gallery.
Wow.
But my guest today is quite easy on the eyes.
Thank you very much.
Yes, he's super educated and smart and all that stuff, too.
Yes,
but
indeed.
Let's just set all of that aside and objectify him for a second.
Why not?
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Jackson Verity. Woo!
Yay!
And let's hear it for Todd in the peanut gallery.
Yay for me.
Yes. You basically own the peanut gallery at this point.
I am the peanut gallery.
You pretty much are. I need some MILFies out there to, like, come in and, you know, throw in their 2 cents and stuff, but... But I love to.
Why are there no peanuts in the peanut gallery?
I don't know. I think the peanut gallery is where they used to, like, throw peanuts.
Ah.
Didn't they? Didn't they, like, that was sort of how they...
Had I known, I would have brought a bag with me.
We should have.
I don't know the history of the peanut gallery.
Then Anthony's got to clean them up, and I don't think he wants to do that.
No.
Hey,
yeah.
Anthony. I always think of that State Farm commercial when I say that. Hey, Anthony.
Is that...
You know, the girl, like, with the...
On the phone?
No, the girl with the French model that she met on the internet. I have not seen that.
I don't know.
Never mind. Okay, whatever.
I don't know. I only watch commercials when I'm in them. That's it. That's the only time.
Nice self-promotion.
Yeah, there you go.
You got one coming up. You want to plug?
Yeah, I'm going to plug.
Did you see Todd in the Super Bowl commercial? He was totally there.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Well, no, that was Academy Awards. That's what you're thinking.
Oh, Academy Awards.
It was the Academy Awards.
Yeah.
Who cares?
No, it's actually not the same difference. Don't insult football that way, I'm saying to myself.
So, yeah, don't insult football.
One is just a big office party that we all have to endure, and the other is the greatest show on earth.
Is that your feeling about the Academy Awards? It's an office party that we have to endure?
Is.
Yeah, that's a good...
It is an office party. How is it not an office party?
Yeah, it's everybody.
I mean, my sister goes to the BIA, the Building Association Awards. You know, it's the same thing. You get a trophy, you talk about how great you are, and you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Generally, those with the highest sales win.
Do they, at that awards, do they have clips of people doing their jobs?
No, probably not.
No.
No, it's probably not nearly as entertaining. You know what I have been to, though, which is super fun if you ever get an opportunity to go, if you know anybody involved, and they're like, hey, do you want to go to the Annie Awards? This is this little theater in Glendale. Go, because it's really, really cool, because they don't televise this award show, And you get to see these little known cartoon clips, you know, and these like little short films and stuff like that. Like you get to see pieces of
Annie
them.
As in animation.
Annie as in the animation.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Yes.
I'm
I should have made that clear.
The sun will come out tomorrow.
Yeah.
I know, what do they give awards to, orphans? It's Andrea McCardle out there singing tunes. But yeah, you should go to that. It's super fun if you ever have an opportunity or invited to go to the Annie Awards. It sounds like, but go because it's kind of cool.
It sounds like
it's
fun.
It's really, really interesting. So back to our guest today.
Yeah, let's talk about this.
All right, but it was, you know, nice chit-chatting with everybody.
Sure.
Okay, I'll go away now, and Jackson's going to take over.
Okay.
Dr. Verity.
Yes.
As we like to call him. He hails from New York, but currently practices in Santa Monica. In 2005, he and his wife, Dr. Pamela Verity.
Another shrink.
I know. Founded Dynamic Learning and Listening Center, where they work with individuals and families seeking to improve social, emotional, and cognitive functioning. To boot, he is a father.
Yes, indeed.
Of twin boys, correct?
Yes, they'll be 16 next month.
Okay, so let me get this straight. Okay, so you and your wife are both doctors in psychology.
Yes.
So basically, if your sons don't grow up to be brilliant, highly contributing members of society, you're screwed.
Well, you know.
That's a lot of pressure.
Pretty much the entire field of psychology is screwed. It's all on you.
Well, I just then will blame it on nature as opposed to nurture.
There you go. I like that. All right, let's hear it for nature versus nurture.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a delicate balance.
It's a balance, yes. So today, actually, we're going to talk about teaching your kids emotional resilience. Today's a parenting show, and Jackson has a program that he's designed to help teach these principles, and I want to let him tell us all about it.
Mm. Well, take it away, Jackson, huh?
There you go.
Yeah, go.
Go, doctor.
Well, you know, I think it's within the context of teaching kids what I call the new three R's, which aside, you know, not reading, writing, and arithmetic, but rather respect, resilience, and resourcefulness. I think that is unfortunately severely lacking in... you know, these kids today.
And their parents.
And their parents.
Actually. Exactly. So maybe it's up to the parents to learn this first. So well, stay tuned. Keep your ears open for yourself and your kids.
Well, it's a good point because actually, you know, in order to parent well, you really need to be able to be aware of your own feelings first.
Right. And you're constantly modeling.
Constantly.
Yeah.
So, you know, today I thought we were...
Wait a sec. So you're saying I shouldn't smoke and drink excessively in front of my kid?
Probably not.
Well, that's a choice.
It's a choice.
Oh. Good choice.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Sounds like
them.
No.
Okay. I don't know.
Well, if you want to teach, you know, then that's fine.
Yeah.
Just don't be surprised.
I want him to grow up to be a badass.
Oh, well, then there you go. Keep on.
Yeah.
Keep on keeping on. Okay. Yeah. So back to the expert. Thank you, Dr. Todd.
Well, I think Todd knows a little bit about himself, and I think that's also another important thing is that we do – it's important for us to start off with ourselves, knowing, you know, where we come from, you know, how do we act the way we act. And, you know, and let's take that little walk down the evolutionary biological road because I think it's important before we can really connect with our kids. It's important, as I said, to get in touch with who we are and, you know, what triggers us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think you can take the boy out of the jungle, but it's really hard to take the jungle out of the boy. And
so you want to acknowledge the primal roots of your parent-child relationship, basically.
Yeah, really.
Make sense?
Yeah, because
you know what I'm saying.
Because parenting, you know,
I think so.
Parenting and actually any relationship is, you know, is a wonderful opportunity to show love and empathy, and but it's also an opportunity to get triggered and become really defensive, you know, instead. And so, where do we get that triggering? How do we at first, you know, it comes from our biology. You know, we're humans are basically a threat assessing animals. You know,
right.
When, you know, we're in the jungle, you know, trying to survive, it's all about, you know, looking out for what can hurt us.
Right. And then we always have that fight or flight kind of in our back pocket,
the
ready to go.
The four Fs. The fight, flight, freeze, and?
I don't know.
Forget about it.
Forget about it.
Oh, forget about it.
I like forget about
it. Actually, it's fornicate. You can use
fornicate.
The
oh, that's good too. I like that too.
Yeah, those things that trigger us, you know, as you know, the animals that we are, and so it's important to know that we get triggered.
Fornication is a trigger.
It is a trigger. Okay. Triggers
Sorry.
Me.
It's really Beavis and Butthead today. Go ahead. Sorry.
So triggers. There you go. So yeah, triggers. So it's important to you know, to be aware of your, you know, your triggers and what you know, what sets you off, and you know, that brings into play the you know, there are two main systems that we've got in our bodies that are, you know, dealing with that. You know, the sympathetic nervous system, which is the system that gets us ramped up, you know, ready to run away from that tiger or freeze so that we're quiet, so you know, the nasty Cro-Magnon man doesn't find us or anything.
That guy's mean.
I shouldn't even bother running from a tiger. I'll just lose.
So there's that, right? That gets us all amped up and ready to fight and protect ourselves.
Yes.
And then there's the other system, which is the parasympathetic system, which is what calms us down.
Right.
And which is what we need to really kind of get in play. So that
which
we can.
Is a system that you can access through yoga and meditation.
Absolutely.
Just okay.
Yeah, no, that's key, absolutely. So, so I think that's really important to be aware of because, again, in order to teach your kids anything, right, you have to be able to connect with them.
Right.
And it's hard. It's really hard to stay connected to your kids when you're a mom yourself. It's a stressful life, and you know, and much of stress also comes from this fight flight stuff that's going on.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
Because we are reacting to the world as if it's, you know, a tiger coming after us. Everything's
right.
Our body doesn't know the difference between, you know, returning an email or, you know, or making your kids lunch, making sure that they have lunch money. We don't know the difference between that. The body doesn't know the
difference. It's all crap that has to be done.
All stuff.
All of it.
Mm.
Yes.
And then,
and if you don't, you fail. Right? So there's the fear.
Right. Well,
right?
There's the fear in there, of course. And then there's the thinking about the future.
Yes.
Which is something that also is, you know, also weighs heavily on us.
So if you get somebody in your practice, right, somebody comes in and they just say, you know, my kid is a tween and I can't connect with them. They seem to be really anxious all the time.
Yeah.
You know, maybe this might be a situation where this would be the route you would go, like sort of teaching emotional resilience. And and so where do you start with respect, let's say, if a child comes in and they – let's say their parents work a lot and they're kind of being raised by the nannies and they're kind of in charge in the household, or let's say, you know, one of their parents, which so often is the case, is maybe not present, maybe alcohol, too much work, whatever, and they don't they haven't developed yet a real respect for elders or for themselves. Where do you start?
Well, you know, you're mentioning a couple of things that are really tough, because we start really in the beginning. So it really is hard once somebody has already had a kind of a lousy start.
Right.
Well, you, in that case, I would say you'd start with yourself. You'd have to start with yourself as the parent.
Okay.
But respect is something that's really important that, that kids need to know from the very beginning. And unfortunately, I think it has to do with I don't want to sound like an old fogey.
Well, you are a fine-looking old fogey, just saying.
But I think it does, you know, I think there's a certain, I don't want to say laxness in the culture, or there's certain, everything is very kind of familiar, and that, you know, everybody is, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Entitlement?
I mean, that's...
I think define respect for me. Like, when you're talking about kids, my kid's 8.
Right.
So what does that mean for an 8-year-old? Like, what should that look like?
Well,
if he's respectful.
Sure. It looks like, first of all, when I say respect, it means, number one, having respect for other people, having respect for your teachers, for your parents, for society, for understanding that. I think what's happened is that, you know, as the pendulum has swung the other side, where, of course, kids need to be treated also with respect, and they're human beings, and they needed to be treated with respect. However, I think the problem is that we start to treat kids like they're little adults.
Right, like they're in charge. We kind of let them run the roost.
Little adults.
Yeah. No, they're not.
But we treat them like little adults. I will see a lot in my practice. I'll see a lot of kids will talk about things like, you know, like, he can't do that. You can't tell me what to do.
Actually.
Or teachers, or they can't tell me what to do. I mean, we have given kids this this idea that they are so empowered. You know, and I'm guessing it's to try to build their self-esteem. But it's that they're so entitled, and whatever they have to say is as important, and whatever they want to do is as important as, say, you know, running the rest of the life, running the rest of the family.
Right.
So I think it's in one sense it's sort of helping kids realize that they're just not as precious as they are. I think,
or that they're just not in charge, I hate to use the word socialization, but essentially that, like, we're kind of operating on a set of rules here in society. And as your parent, it's my job to handle a whole lot of shit that you don't even understand. Right. You don't even know what I'm doing behind the scenes.
Right.
And that, you know, the rules here are that this really isn't a democracy. We are in charge, and your opinion matters. But ultimately, you know, you're a kid, and you will get to make your own decisions when you are an adult, and you're paying the bills, and it's your household.
Right. There's
and it's
a
all
reason,
those things.
Right. There's a reason why we don't let, you know, 4-year-olds drive cars.
Right. Like, we're in charge of your health.
Well,
and
they're
safety.
Too short.
It's like our job.
They are too short.
That is the only
That's
good
the
reason.
Only reason.
Yeah. And it's our job to get them from point A to point B, healthy, safe, and educated.
Right. And I think also what I see a lot in my practice, and what I do a lot of also, you know, parenting, you know, work with parents, is the inability of the parent to deal with their child's uncomfortable feelings.
Yes.
And, like what?
Well, like if somebody, you know, a kid wants something and they see that the kid is in distress, then because it's difficult for them to see their child being in distress, so then they will do something, you know, give in to that in order to not see their kid.
I feel like I just read something somewhere about, like, kids right now they never suffer anything. We don't allow them to suffer, go through, like, a horrible thing or feel sad or, you know, we always want to pull them out of that.
And that's part of building resilience, because really resilience comes out of that that ability to withstand that hardship and come out on the other side, and not only come out on not only just survive it, but actually thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, you have to have that, you have to feel that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's important for parents is to acknowledge the feeling, whatever that feeling may be, sadness, anger, disappointment, to acknowledge it. So instead mm-hmm. of just saying, you know, quit your crying or quit
right.
your yapping,
right.
which, you know, was done maybe, you know, 40 years ago,
mm-hmm.
it's to acknowledge that feeling, but then also then to move on from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's okay to be sad, and it's okay to be disappointed, but this is what we're doing.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, and you can empathize with them. You can say, I know, it sucks. It really sucks, you know, and like having a math teacher who's like super, super, super strict or something, and you just have to say, I know, it kind of sucks. You got all but one problem done, and you got a zero on your homework, and that was the rule at the beginning of
right.
the semester, and it totally sucks.
Right.
I get you,
yeah.
but that's life,
yeah.
you know?
Actually, I had the same thing.
Got to play by the
yeah,
rules.
Yeah, similar thing happened the other day with my kid, with a math thing. And
yeah.
it was, you know, X equals whatever, and he got the number, but he didn't write X equals.
Yeah.
And so
there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I had an interesting experience with my 14-year-old who started babysitting the kid across the way. She hadn't been called in a while, and she was like, well, I hope she still wants me to babysit. And sure enough, she got a call. And she's texting me. She's like, Mom, I really want to go to swim practice, but so-and-so called me. And I said, look, when you have a client, sometimes you got to say yes when you don't want to say yes, and you got to give up something. So you can say no, of course, but she may give up on you.
Right.
You know? And so you have to be willing to take that risk. And she said, okay, well, I'm going to say yes. And I said, you know, and if you're really unhappy, you'll walk through it and you'll know next time you'd rather go to swim practice and you'd rather risk losing
right.
your job, essentially. And so, because, you know, the stakes aren't super high at this point, right? And so she's home from school, and she's just beside herself, desperately wanting to go to swim practice. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is that just physically it makes her feel so much
sure.
better. And she's
yeah.
a 14-year-old girl, and, you know, thank God she has that. And oh man, it was so hard because I'm watching her just be so distressed. And mm-hmm. of course, I'd be thrilled if my kid went and exercised for a couple hours and got into a better mood.
Right.
That'd be better for all of us, right? So I'm just sort of letting her, you know, sit in this, and she's getting kind of angry. I'm like, I know, honey, you know, these are just the decisions we make. And then I realize what she's done, which brings us to the next point, the resourcefulness, mm-hmm. is she has texted the other neighbor who has also babysat for the kid. And she said, are you available tonight? And she checked with her. She called the mom. She said, are you okay with Lauren taking my shift?
Right, right.
And the mom said, yeah, sure, that's no problem. I'm actually going out with Lauren's mom tonight. You know, like, it's fine. And she goes, okay, great. I just, you know, I just really, you know, need to do my homework and go to swim yeah. practice. And she's like, yeah, no problem. And it was all good. Who knows? But she made that decision. She knew she was risking maybe this person will give up on her.
Right.
And she had the resourcefulness to go, I really want to solve this problem.
Yeah.
And she called this
well, that's
other
wonderful
person.
That you, mm-hmm. yeah.
So I was really proud of her.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, that like hour and a half that I just had to kind of like sit with her and not fix this problem and not, you know, it's
right.
hard. It's
well,
hard.
You can, as a parent, and sure, it's definitely, you don't want to jump in
no,
and
you
fix
can't
it
save
for
the day
them.
All the time.
But what you can do is help them with the problem-solving process.
Yes.
And that really is our job, and that's my
right.
job also as a psychologist, is to help somebody, not to solve their problems, although many folks want me to do that,
right.
but it's to help them with that process. So,
yes.
you know, that what's the step? How can we go about fixing this situation?
Right.
You've got a challenge here. What can we do to make it better?
Right. So make sure you call the mom. You know, so that's what I do. Call her, make sure it's okay before
right.
you confirm here. Feel it out. If
right.
she seems disappointed.
Right.
I'll leave it up to you to do the right thing.
Right.
You know, you're not out of it yet, you know, kind of thing. And she did. And I could kind of hear the conversation. It all went really well. But yes, that was – I was glad that I just didn't, like, jump in and fix it.
And ultimately, that's where her self-esteem will come from, is
yes.
through that experience of having that experience of having a challenge and then, you know, rising to the occasion – figuring it out, and then realizing that, you know what, I'm able to do this. I'm capable. And that's where also resilience comes from. You know, there's a certain amount of it that comes from knowing that you can survive something, that, yes. You know, this isn't the end of the world. Yes, right. It's horrible. Yes, it's sad. Yes, it's, you know,
totally disappointing.
Yeah, it's difficult.
It could be torturous.
Mm-hmm. All of your friends have iPhones and you don't.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, that's the next episode. That. Sorry. Yeah.
But that you can survive, you can thrive, and you can move forward. But and part of that, you know, I think resilience, you know, what makes up resilience is it's a combination of strength and flexibility. You know, those two things are really, really important. And especially with flexibility, it's the flexibility of thought.
Right.
Being able to not just be stuck with this, X doesn't work out, so then my life is ruined. It's
right.
What else can I do?
With your twins, do you have one who's a little more flexible than the other?
It depends on the issue.
Yeah.
You have one that's really flexible in the kind of food that he eats, and one that's more rigid. One that's more flexible in the physical activity he does, and one that's more.
Yeah. So you have to know your kid too.
Really important to know your kid.
Yeah.
Really, really important. The other thing that's interesting about resilience is that, you know, it's not just that, you know, in resilient people, we think, oh, the resilient people are folks who just good stuff always happens to them. They just have an easy life, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not that. It's not the amount of good stuff or bad stuff. I mean, resilient people have just as much bad stuff happen to them. Or
some of them are just like super lucky. I mean, let's be honest. There's a few people out there who are lucky and everything works out.
You're absolutely right. I wouldn't call those people resilient, though.
They're just lucky.
They're just lucky.
And they seem resilient because shit doesn't happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Or maybe they haven't had that experience yet. And you're right. And then there are people who really, really.
Oh, they're headed for a fall.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Yeah. It's going to be crushing and awful.
And if Todd has anything to do with it, I think it'll
happen. He's going
to
watch and point and laugh. I knew it was going to happen.
What should I be doing with an 8-year-old for resilience?
Yeah, let's say his 8-year-old is like really wants to go someplace. I don't know. And the answer is just flat out no.
Always wants to go to the toy store.
Okay, so he wants to go to the toy store.
Well, that's not actually really resilience, but it is. I mean, it's a legitimate question. I mean, when it's dealing with disappointment, right?
Right.
Is that what you're asking?
Well, yeah.
The most common thing that parents are dealing with is like, I have to say no, and then I have to deal with the disappointment and the tantrums and the pouting.
Right. Sure.
So where do we go there?
I would hire a nanny.
Excellent advice.
Okay.
Okay, that's your problem-solving technique.
That's what I would do. First of all, it's acknowledging.
Delegate.
It's going in again and acknowledging that feeling. You know, I know you really want to do this, or you know, I know it's really disappointing, and I know, and I would.
Okay,
want,
so honor the feeling.
You got to honor the feeling.
Yeah, I do that, and then you know, and he'll stay pissed because that doesn't get him the toy, and then I let him stay pissed.
You let him stay.
Yeah, that's what I do.
You absolutely let him stay pissed. Now, what you can do is
it's up to him to then
get over
it. Here's the problem. The danger is that if you try to jump in too soon, he doesn't get a chance to experience that feeling. And then he doesn't live through that feeling and then come out on the other side.
Right.
Very often we are quick to distract our kids, right? Or, you know,
you can't have this, but you can have this.
The other thing. And it's quick. Mm-hmm. And it's to save ourselves the discomfort of witnessing that child be in that state.
Yes.
Or, you know, again, you know, you have something to do. It gets very hard when, you know, you've got somewhere to go or something to do and you're dealing with this, you know, maniac. And you've got to get out the door. And so, you know, you think that, well, it's, you know, I'll just, you know, shove a lollipop in his face or something, you know, to that effect to get him to quiet down.
Right.
And it's really, you know, you're.
I'm more likely to do that if I'm, like, if I'm at home with him, I have no problem with him crabbing out and, you know, going to his room and being angry.
Right.
It's a little more difficult when you're in a public scenario or at a party or whatever.
Oh, my God. Or hanging out with other friends and their kids. That is so challenging because you're trying to have a nice day with your friends, right? And the kids are getting along and then suddenly they're not and you just want, you know, we always try to push the day longer than we should, right? Of course. But you just want to kind of appease so that you can continue your picnic or your pool day or whatever.
Right.
And man, that is probably when my worst parenting happens.
Right. And it happens.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, it happens to all of us. So, you know, you don't want to, you know, beat yourself up too much. That's what Todd's here for. He can do that.
Yes. Yeah. He'll call me later and I'll read me the
But you know what? If you can't,
you know you failed your child.
What are you doing?
In the ideal world, and that's what we're talking
about. You made us all look bad.
Right?
Yeah.
In the ideal world, you want to use it as a, you know, as a learning opportunity, as an opportunity for, you know, to have them, again, to develop that sense of, okay, I have this feeling, sit with it for a little while, and then what you can do is just try to offer, you know, help problem solve. Let's try to offer something else, but I wouldn't do it right away.
Okay.
You know, let them sit with the feeling for a little bit. And mm-hmm. and in that case, it really takes your own breathing and being aware and helping to soothe your own anxiety, because that's really what it's about in that situation.
Yeah.
They're freaking out, or their worry, their distress is causing anxiety in you. And so if you first breathe yourself, I think you even talk about this in your book, Sophie, about, you know, the oxygen mask, you know, getting the oxygen mask to you first before you can actually help or soothe your child.
Yeah, because you can't do a whole lot of problem solving anyway in that state.
Right. Mm-hmm.
My younger daughter has really taught me this, because ever since she was an infant, she just has to be pissed for like 2.5 minutes. And then actually she kind of magically will get over most stuff.
Right.
But I cannot try to reason even a tiny bit with her when she is in that state.
Right.
I just have to let her go through it.
Yeah.
And then we can say, and here's a question for you. Mm-hmm. Like if there's something like, I mean, I don't know if my kids ever throw that big a tantrum about not getting something, but if they're, you know, they want something that's maybe kind of expensive, or that's, you know, just not in the family budget, frankly, right now, you know, and they can't get it, and they get kind of like really pissy about it, you know, like really upset. And so you let them go through the feeling. Then I mean, like you're saying, you offer solutions, like maybe they can do dishes, or they mm-hmm. can earn it, or maybe if they get half, then you can.
Right, or you teach them how to delay gratification.
Right, but it almost seems like you gotta, I mean, do you address the sort of tantrum? I guess what I would have to say is, like, I get that you're upset, but you can't, like, upset everybody in the household
it depends, right? And that'll go back to respect, too. If within their tantrum, they start yelling and cursing at you.
No, not okay.
Then that's,
that's not cool.
No. So then you do need to address
door
that.
Slamming is so not okay in my house. That's like, oh my God, they slam the door. Mama Bear is just like, rah!
But yeah, I think that's the same thing. Yeah.
I think you're wise in realizing that there are times when you can take on this, you know, and teach them in that moment, and then there are times when you really can't. And when they are activated, it's not a time to teach a lesson.
Right.
It's not. It's a time for them to, you know, make sure that they're safe. Number one,
mm-hmm.
make sure that they're not doing anything, you know, punching walls or punching people. So make sure that they're safe. Also, you know, again, if they cross the line as far as respect.
Mm-hmm.
You call that out, something like, you know, don't talk to me that way, or I won't be spoken to that way.
I have that conversation quite a bit, because when he's not getting his way, he becomes – this is my bed that I have to sleep in because I made it, but he's a bit of a wise ass.
I can't even imagine.
Where he gets that from.
Yeah, it's really weird.
I chip off the old block.
Oh, the shit
but
that comes
he,
out
like,
of his mouth. It's incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, in a good way.
He yes, that's true. But he uses this so he can hide behind, like, it's comedy. I'm just joking around.
Right,
so
right.
Like that's when I get into, because sometimes
the Paul Reiser bit. I'm just saying. It's like you can say anything.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like crap. No, I'm just saying.
And sometimes, sometimes I think it's like hard for me to decipher, because sometimes I think he genuinely is just trying to be funny.
Right.
And other times he's being a different kind of wise ass.
Right.
So it's like hard to navigate those waters.
I go through that too. Sometimes.
You know, the other really tough thing about being a parent, you know, the last, you know, couple of years, you know, 10 years or so, is that we sort of lost our favorite, you know, the weapon that our parents had and everybody had, you know, for millennia before us, which was fear.
Yeah, I know, right? There's no fear.
There's no fear. And I think that's one of the reasons why parenting is so hard today, is because kids don't fear their parents. And I think that, you know, some of that is good. I mean, I think it's good not to be afraid that you're going to get your butt
no.
kicked.
No. But, I don't think that.
However, I do think that, and that goes back to, again, to respect. I think that that fear is important, not fear of bodily harm, but fear of, oh, that if I don't, you know, if this behavior is not appropriate, there's going to be some sort of consequence.
Yes, yeah.
And without fear, really, I think it makes it really, really, really hard to parent. And
yes.
So the trick is, you know, is to use the tools that we do have to at least impose some sort of, well, there's a consequence for, you know, for misbehavior.
Yeah. And so, for some kids, they are so they're so invested in their parents' approval that sometimes just your parents' kind of disappointment
Absolutely.
Is really powerful with them. And but boy, the kids that's not powerful with, that's
right.
Boy, that's tricky.
It is really tricky.
Really tricky.
And you know, and we try to, you know, to appeal to their their higher self, and they don't really have much of
right.
a higher self
yeah.
yet. You know, it's very much into, well, you know, depending on the age, you know, and the stage, you know, it's either I'm in trouble or but you know, so it's difficult. It's important to teach empathy as early as you can.
Is that the frontal lobe that can deal with, understand that there's consequences for behavior? Is that what developed yet, right?
The prefrontal cortex.
Prefrontal cortex.
Right, sure. That has to do with also with inhibition, really.
Oh.
That's when one of the real, you know, matters here is that not being able to inhibit themselves, not being able to realize what the consequences of their behaviors are going to be.
And that's something I think really, really important for parents to understand is, on a fundamental level, literally that part of your child's brain is not developed
yet. It's not developed until you're about 24.
Right. Yeah. So on one level, you really have to hold off on getting so pissed off that they don't get it. Like,
right.
You really have to kind of go like, because your kid can be just a genius in so many ways,
sure.
You know, and insightful, and like say the craziest stuff that you're like, you know, you start thinking of them as older than they are. But when it comes to actually understanding consequences and having forethought about consequences,
right.
They literally are buckets with holes. You have to keep telling them.
Yeah. It's funny. I read something recently where somebody described, parenting little children like teaching a puppy how to do something. It's like, really, you have to just keep just being very, you know,
right.
You can be kind.
Right.
You know, you don't have to hit them with a newspaper,
right.
You know. But it's just get over and over,
over
and over,
over
and picking
yeah.
them up and putting them down
yeah.
and picking them up and putting them down
yeah.
and just understanding where we're going to
Like when you find yourself saying, how could you? Just
right.
remember, oh, because you're eight.
Yeah,
it's, right.
that's
yeah.
like, especially when you're spending a lot of time with your kid,
yeah.
your kids,
yep.
that's when you start forgetting that they're kids and
yeah.
start treating them like little adults.
Right.
It's
It also happens to singletons very often. Kids who are just, you know, single kids are treated very much, by their parents as a much older, you know, more like a peer.
That's my situation because
right.
he's they say solo now. You don't say only child because
right.
that's got bad connotations, I guess. So now he's Han Solo,
right.
which is cool. I like Han Solo.
Yeah.
But
political correctness is going to ruin the
world. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Well, it's better than calling your kid Chewbacca.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. Chewy. Chewy.
Yeah.
That's kind of cute.
But yeah, I in that situation all the time where we're forgetting that he's just eight. And it's very easy with, you know, two grown-ups and a kid.
Sure.
And, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like having another grown-up around. Because it's almost easier to have. That's
yeah.
why I think it's really important.
Well, and he, you know, because he's – you know, on his own so much in as far as like peers, you know, we're hanging out with adults, he does rise to the occasion
right.
quite a bit
mm-hmm. right.
and does, you know, can behave very in a very grown up
sure.
manner. But then
sure.
like when he trips and something bad's going, you know, when it turns around, then that's when you have to remember, oh yeah, he is just a kid.
Right.
You know, I read something interesting about these, let's see, do I have 10 minutes? These playgrounds that are popping up in – I can't remember what state I was reading. Anyhow, they're not really playgrounds. They're kind of empty open spaces with, you know, old chairs and like a creek and
we used
wood
to call them vacant lots.
Well, they are essentially. However, they do have an attendant, but the attendant doesn't do much of anything except make sure that nobody gets dead. And there's like, you know, there's like old furniture and, you know, piles of mattresses and like just like, and there's barrels.
It
where
sounds
they
like you're describing a Fat Albert episode.
Yeah. Well, it
it's
is.
It's like a junkyard. Yeah.
It is. It's a junkyard.
Is Mushmouth there?
Yeah. And they can start fires even in the barrels. You know, if they, if, wow. you know, so be it. And
hobo camp.
Hobo camp.
Kind of, I wish I could remember the name for these things. I'm going to remember it for
do
next
they all,
time.
Do they hand out bindles?
But what's, but what's interesting about it is that the kids go there and they, you know, they climb, they jump, they, you know, do whatever. And they have to use their own judgment and they have to make decisions and they you know give each other shit for make you know for starting the fire and making too much smoke and they kind of
they
can trip and fall and what they're looking at is how kids are so helicoptered you know that these all these generic playgrounds popped up and none of them can really entertain a kid who's more than a toddler, you know, for more than a few visits, really. Mm-hmm. And they're so designed, and yet kids still fall off. And there's almost a school of thought that they fall off because they never have to use their own judgment. Right. Like, everything is sort of, sure. you know, they literally don't have as much balance because they just haven't fallen enough.
Use it or lose it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's very – this sort of movement is a response to the overprotected padded
right.
playground
right.
where of course nobody wants freak accidents to happen to your kids, of course, but they happen in the quote safest of places, you know,
sure.
and we can't prevent our kids from falling all
the time.
Well,
we learn how to survive the world by interacting with it. And
right.
if you just, you know, interact with a padded room,
which
then,
is pretty much,
right.
yeah.
I just got in a big debate with a friend of mine who doesn't have children, but feels like comfortable enough to judge my parenting.
Awesome, but love that.
I'm sure they have cats then.
Yeah, exactly. he's got roommates. But we were talking about helmets, bike helmets.
Yeah,
and I make my kid wear a bike helmet when he's on a scooter and stuff. Because he's not, you know, super coordinated with those things. But he was like, when we were kids, we didn't have to wear helmets. And I guess now it's like you have to.
Sure.
Yeah. And I don't know if I agree with that. Like, his point being that that's almost a little bit fascist.
Yeah, we had
then
a little something called traumatic brain injury.
Well, that's what I was sort of saying. I was like, well, wearing a helmet's kind of smart, and I see what you're saying about not making it a choice,
right.
but he's like, but that's part of, you know, growing up and learning that, like, his argument is sort of that, but about bike helmets.
Yeah, well,
so
he's taking it to the other extreme.
There's got to be a line drawn.
Right.
In
we do know, and this was even mentioned in this article about the playgrounds, that a fall from a child's own height onto the asphalt can actually crack. You know, I mean, you can cause serious brain injury. So we cannot protect against everything,
right.
you know,
right.
it's like people say, well, you need a helmet if you're going to ride a motorcycle, but you don't need it if you ride a bike, or you don't need it. Again, the whole personal choice thing, that's a political issue, whether it should be the law, but you know your kid.
Right.
And
right.
a very simple fall off a scooter can cause way more damage than you would think if they hit just the wrong way. So why not help prevent against that?
Yeah.
That's my feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can go overboard and put them in, you know, full protective gear.
Bubble wrap.
Bubble
wrap. No, yeah, obviously you can go too
but,
far.
But, you know, also...
Like,
you know,
a helmet smart.
Right. And also, you know, my parents didn't, you know, wear a seatbelt when they drove. So now we wear seatbelts. So there are some things.
Of course.
That, you know,
and there are more people on the roads. There's more cars on the roads.
Right.
There's bigger cars on the roads. Everybody's driving. You know, so we really do have different things to deal with than we dealt with, you know, back in the good old days,
right.
as they supposedly were.
It's a balance.
So,
you know, like anything else, it's really hard.
So tell do a little wrap up here on your three
up.
R's and kind of give us the
not a beatbox wrap up, just like a verbal.
I'm showing my age, is that it? Well, you know, here's the one thing that I do want to say that I don't think we've really mentioned yet is that
we
again,
can go over.
Part of resilience or you know, people who are resilient.
Mm-hmm.
That, studies have shown is that in order to be resilient, it really has a lot to do with the amount of positivity that you have in the rest of your life.
Hmm.
So in order to have that strength, when I was talking before about, you know, strength and flexibility, the strength really comes from having enough positive experiences that you can point to in your life so that you can then put that you know, whatever that tragedy or whatever that difficult thing was, to be able to put it into context.
Mm-hmm.
So
give you a reason for getting over
give
it.
Give you a reason for getting over it. So
okay.
Being able to appreciate things about your life,
mm-hmm.
things, you know, and to really have the experience of joy, of interest, of hope, of awe, you know, those types of things, really having those good things go on in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a parent, I think one of the things that we can help our children is teach them gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to teach anything, really, the best way to teach anything is to model it ourselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to, you know, put things into perspective. And if you're having those moments of connection with your children, you know, especially with, you know, parenting is so stressful itself.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why we do those things is, aside from just, you know, the loving, or, you know, the unconditional love that we feel, but we've also had moments of deep, deep connection with them, of just being able to, you know, play with them or see that smile or have that touch.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it is it's about fostering those moments, fostering the moments of really enjoying life, of really seeking and getting pleasure in things that aren't just you know, material, but really mm-hmm. in the relationships. And so if you can foster that that gratitude, that joy, that really will help and go a long ways to giving that child and giving yourself the tools to be resilient.
Mm-hmm.
So that
it's really difficult when your kid's, you know, not getting along with people at school, or they don't feel liked, and, you know, it's real painful, and they don't have the relationships that they want at school. My girls went into a new school and experienced some of that. It was very difficult, and sort of teaching them and reminding them to be grateful for the wonderful friendships that they do have, and showing them that it is possible to meet those friends. And, you know, it's a hard lesson to learn that not everybody's going to like you, and
right.
And, you know, kids can be cruel and they make fun. And
right.
And
that's all. Yeah. And you know, again, that's one of those situations where, you know, our first reaction is to jump in and give them, show them the bright side. Think of the bright side.
Or
right?
Tell them, oh, they must really like you. Or, you know,
right.
And they're like, no, they really don't.
You don't always want to hear that.
No.
Like sometimes
you don't always want it
like,
fixed.
No. Don't tell me the bright side right now. I don't.
Right.
That
again,
it
goes
makes
back
it
to acknowledging the feeling. Acknowledging
mm-hmm.
the feeling. Sit in the feeling for a little while. And then if you can talk about what's really very helpful is, again, talking about yourself and your own life.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about where, you know, you can say it, that I don't know exactly how you feel, but I know what it feels like to be sad, or I know
mm-hmm.
what it feels like to be disappointed, or I know what it feels like. And then you can talk about your own experience.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time, and then you can say, and then you can talk about, then I realize that I do have these friends, or I do enjoy that. You know, again,
right.
by sharing your story, it's much easier for the child to learn from that, as opposed to you kind of giving them wisdom from on
right.
high.
Right.
Wisdom from on high. Yeah, and I think that it in relation to what you're talking about as well, and we're going to talk about this some more in the next episode when it comes to exposure and what our kids are exposed to, you know, on their devices and online and all of that stuff, is I think, you know, the world's a crazy place, and the world was a crazy place for our parents too, and, you know, everybody has had their global fears. You know, every generation has had their global fears.
Right.
And we're so inundated with negativity in the news and darkness that I do think that as a parent, of course you want to teach your children about the world, but I think that piece of gratitude is so important because they don't get the whole big picture. And if you're only showing them the picture of how the world is screwed
mm-hmm.
and we're all screwed,
right.
then they kind of don't have a reason to graduate high school. They don't have a reason. You know, you know what I'm saying? They're like, well, so I gotta deal with this and grow and overcome for what?
Mm.
You know? And like, what does the world hold for me anyway? And I think that you can foster depression if you don't try to balance out, you know, that which is coming through the media. And mm-hmm. even if you're angry about it, even if you're upset,
sure.
that's adult shit. Mm-hmm. You know, your kids can't process that in the same way that you can.
Right.
And so you need to hold both spaces.
Yeah. What I do that. Is I just tell my son, like when we're talking about global warming or wars
yeah.
or disease.
Yeah, they get really
like
freaked
that.
Out about that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I just tell him it's up to you mm-hmm. to save the world.
So no pressure
if
there.
If you
no
don't pressure. Save the world, we're all screwed. But
right.
that
like, and his kids too, because right. you know, two doctors.
Yeah, oh yeah,
yeah.
They,
it's
yeah,
on you guys.
Yeah.
Right here. These that's three boys are the three amigos. They're gonna do it. We're gonna make capes. That's right. All right. Well, do you feel like you were able to kind of wrap up the three R's there?
We did a pretty good job with some of the R's. And
okay,
maybe
so we want to honor the feeling.
R's. Honor the feeling.
Yep.
Right.
We want to let them go through it.
Yeah.
Deal with your own discomfort.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is going to help them with their own resilience, that experience, and then help them with their resourcefulness. Like
sure.
show them that they're resourceful.
Right. And make sure that there are enough positive things going on. And by positive, I don't mean giving them stuff so that they're happy
yeah.
about it.
Like,
but have enough positive
love.
Experiences in their life so that they have the resources.
Yeah.
Right? Have enough so they have the resources to go ahead and to get through, you know, life's challenges.
Yeah.
Because life is challenging. And to let them know. And to also share your own process. When you're in a situation and you're feeling frustrated, talk out loud. Go ahead and say, you know what, Mom's having a really hard time right now. I have to, you know, take care of it. I got to prepare for the show.
Mm-hmm.
I got to make sure that you, again, get to school on time.
Right.
I got to pay the bills. I got a lot of stuff right now. Okay, take a big, you know, a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
Calm yourself down. And then say, okay, let me do, you know, first things first. So if they see you handling a stressful situation
mm-hmm.
and they see that there's a way of going about doing that, then they're more likely to learn that, okay, they can then in tune be able to do the same.
Especially when you can come around, you know, eventually and kind of be in a good, positive mood again. Not always easy, but when they can actually see you kind of recover from something, I think that's so powerful.
I think it's very powerful.
You
and
know?
One of the most powerful things also I think a parent can do is to be aware of when they do handle something or mishandle something, depending on the age of the child, to be able to repair and to go back to them and say, you know what, Dad didn't
Mom
handle that
Mom had
the
a little
way.
Tantrum
yeah. Oh, yeah.
there.
And really,
oh, I've never had to say that. Sorry, Mommy had a tantrum.
and let them know that, you know what, there was a better way for me to handle
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Right.
And then if you can't even know, you know what, I could have done this
mm-hmm.
or I could have done that, and really that would have been, and I'd like to be able to do that, and maybe next time I can do that, and let
yeah.
them know. Because again, that lets them know, number one, that you're, you know, fallible, which is important.
Mm-hmm.
You're still in charge, though. You don't want to abdicate your authority.
No, there's nothing about that.
Right.
That yeah, that's...
But they understand, too, that because it helps them connect with you, really,
mm-hmm.
because then you're not the, you know, again, the ogre. You're just
you're not
new,
always right. Always the, you know, it's like they see
and
you
it teaches
relating.
Them. It teaches them that it's really important to apologize,
mm-hmm.
to own up to their own stuff. And unfortunately, again, we've sort of fostered a culture of it's not my responsibility, it's not my deal, it's not my thing. And to be able to say, you know what, I'm sorry, I was wrong in that moment. Here's what I should have done or what I could have done, and you know, let's move forward from here. That's
yes.
really, really important. And that's about respect, because that's showing that you respect that other person in
right.
order to be able to, you know, you care about their feelings enough to really apologize.
Right.
Right.
So when are you going to apologize to me, Todd?
I'm deeply sorry, Sophie. I'm so sorry.
Well, all right. Well, that's the end of this episode here. Thank you, Dr. Jackson Verity. Don't you
My
love
pleasure.
How that sounds?
Sure.
And Dr. Todd.
Dr.
Yeah.
Todd.
Sorry, you didn't earn it. He worked hard for his. Okay. You can find me on Facebook as Sophie Venable. You can follow my occasional tweets on Twitter at MILF Talk. And if you want some good old-fashioned modern advice, you can find my book, MILF 101, on Amazon.com. So thank you all for listening.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me. takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.